The Pat Kenny Show
on News Talk with Mastercard.
In studio with me now, a writer who's published over a dozen plays, two collections of poetry and nine novels. And later this week, he debuts his newest creation as part of the Dublin Theatre Festival. It follows last year's hugely successful novel, Days Without End, which saw him become the first writer to win the prestigious Costa Book Award twice and also earned a spot on the Booker Prize long list. Sebastian Barry, you're very welcome to the programme.
I'm delighted to be here. I'm surprised I'm here. There was terrific traffic on the M50, I'm here to say.
Yeah, and you are just back from the land of Trump.
I am. It gives the arrival of Trump has given that new feeling that you better enjoy the day because there may be no more days when he's finished with us.
Now, the writing, both Days Without End and the new play, which is called On Blueberry Hill, were inspired in a way by your son.
Well, I rather grandly, but I'm sure no one noticed, announced, I think it was the Dorky Book Festival in 2010, maybe, that I wouldn't write any more plays, trying to stop myself in a way. Because what I meant really was that I didn't want to write any more plays unless they were naturally occurring events. And as you get older, that sort of text seems to be more rare. So I was giving up, but just going to write novels. But Toby, my lovely Toby, my radiant boy, when he was 16, a couple of years ago, got really unhappy the way sometimes young men do. And it's a moment when you must mobilize yourself, you know, to the nth degree to try and find out what the problem is, because sometimes it can be quite a small problem and it's a really dangerous situation. So I was anxious in the extreme about the whole thing. We had 9 months of worry about it. And then one day his infinitely wise sister told him, just go in and say it to them what's bothering you. So in he came, that amazing 20-foot walk of incredible bravery that young people have to do to say this to their parents. And he just said, thing is, Dad, I'm gay. As it was the clue to his unhappiness, the effect on me was of immense relief and immense sense of freedom. And I think in him as well. And it was the beginning of him more or less, I suppose, being a new muse to what I was doing in my work, because accidentally, in a way, because he then had to undertake the hard task of teaching his rather stupid, thick-headed, straight father what being gay was. So we did our glorious 20 hours with RuPaul's Drag Race and all the rest of it. And it was exhilarating, and I became completely overwhelmed and delighted by this new area of thought, and Toby gave that to me.
You also interpret gay pride in an interesting parental way.
Well, yes, I think, you know, parents of gay children can take immense pride in that, and there is a very special parental pride I have found. It just seemed to me a radiant condition of being, you know, and it made me very anxious just having put three children through the school system, for instance, and university. Made me very anxious for that to be made much clearer to young children who are gay or will discover themselves to be gay, because it's the most natural thing in the world, and anything that dismays your child should be dismissed far, far out of the classroom and out of their circle of friends.
The writing of Days Without End, was that coincident with this revelation from Toby, or were you
well,
already...
Well, first the play, that was in the spring of 2015... The play, then the marriage referendum. I see that as sort of I wrote a tiny letter to the Irish Times, but in a way I see that as my magnum opus in a strange sort of way, because it's the little few lines that made Toby cry in my workroom. So I cherish that as sort of, that was my Nobel Prize for that letter, if you like. And then the novel was beginning, so the rest of the year was taken up with that. So it was the year of Toby's emergency, which had transmuted into this time of incredible light, really, and lucent days. I don't know if I'll ever be so happy writing again in that way. And that was all in Toby's gift.
Now, you had said not going to write another play, and in fact, your director had commissioned you to write a play, and you were tempted, what, to give him the money back?
You see, there's this ravishing guy called Jim Colliton, who is I mean, not only Gentleman Jim, but you know, he's one of those people who know, you know, it's the Gandhi school of directing, where you are in yourself incredibly benign, but you know exactly what you want and you're going to get what you want. And that's Jim. So it's irresistible working with him again. But and so I did take a commission against my better instincts. And it sat, I had a page for about 6 years sitting on my desk. And then, as I say, this incredible event with Toby, and then the play came of its own accord in the spring of 2015. And Jim, in the meantime, yes, I had said to Jim, listen, I'll give you the money back, Jim. I feel dreadful about this. You know, they're a small, tight theatre company, and like all theatre companies, they need every cent they have. But he rather wisely, I think, said, or rather in a very friendly but hopeful way, said, no, I think we'll leave it ride like it was a long bet.
And so it came to pass. On Blueberry Hill, which is previewing from tomorrow night in the Pavilion Theatre in Dunleary and then opens on Friday, what's it about? I mean, on Blueberry Hill, I'm thinking of Fats Domino and the song.
Absolutely. I mean, the radiant Fats Domino, who, as you know, during Hurricane Katrina disappeared. I mean, Fats Domino disappeared for 10 days and reappeared then in California, I think. And, you know, the sense of jubilation and joy when that happened. You know, that's a sort of resurrection. And the play, I mean, I do adore that song. But in the printed lyrics, it says something like, I found my thrill on blue. But when he sings it, he says, I found my freedom on Blueberry Hill. Now that, I found my freedom, is key to the play, because these are two guys in Mountjoy. And I can't say too much about their story because that's the whole point of the play and I'll leave it to them to say it. But they're in together. They have been mortal enemies at some point. And this is about the rapprochement or the slow ability that I think is innate in human beings to gradually make accommodation with each other. And by the end of the play, I think they have attained their freedom. And it is a dark play with, you know, there's stories of murder and they have committed murders. And, you know, it is quite ferocious. But in those seemingly cindered people, you might say, I think oftentimes is found the best examples of humanity.
You've delved into your own extended family, going back in time as well as virtual contemporary life for your themes.
Yes.
So where is all this murder and mayhem and this darkness and criminality?
Well,
is there some of that locked away in the archive?
Well, I'm sure. But, you know, although my mother was the great expert of family secrets, she never uncovered any murders exactly. But no, I think this part of Toby's effect on me, that I was writing all these family plays and all these family novels. And in a way, what I needed to do was just go beyond those few fields a little bit and wander out into the uncut grass, as it were, and the scrubland. And that's where I am with a play like this. Also with Days Without End, which, I mean, a man like Thomas McNulty had half a sentence surviving. My great uncle was at the Indian Wars. That's what my grandfather said. So I had to invent an entire world for him. And the more you have to invent, the better. These two men, though, are part of me in the sense that in the sense that, you know, when I'm 62 and when you get a bit older, you do notice, or you hopefully notice that to some degree you have imprisoned yourself. To some degree you have condemned yourself. To some degree you're living in a sort of unfree darkness, just in certain areas of your life. You don't, and the way to cure that, as it were, is by a completely honest appraisal of yourself, and even to speak it out, to write it out, and accommodate yourself within, you know, within your own heart and soul. And that is a little road to freedom. And so in that sense, they are middle-aged men, you know, late middle age, like Christie is 69 and PJ is, you know, mid-50s. So they're getting up there, and there is a resolution that they need to find for what they are. Because how do you breathe in and out? How do you attain a modicum of happiness that everyone deserves? Sometimes you have to be your own, as it were, benign jury and have a look at, you know, what you've done. Like in Roseanne in The Secret Scriptures, writing out her book, not for anyone to read, but to meet herself, you know, like Dante in the wood halfway. So there's an element of personal emergency in the play where you know, I went through a year of talking cure, the psychotherapy thing, a few years after my mother died, because I was getting quite distressed. And that, in a sense, was a 9-month play, if my beautiful psychiatrist had taped it. And this is a compressed version of that, really, sort of a confession of the two men, but kind of joyous in places. And I have to say, in the hands of Niall Buggy and David Ganley, very funny. I was at rehearsals yesterday and I was surprised to discover that in some ways I had written a comedy, which was very thrilling for a 62-year-old serious, supposedly, writer.
Well, the play, as I mentioned, in previews from tomorrow night at the Pavilion Theatre in Dunleary, and it is opening formally on Friday, and it's going to run all the way through to October the 8th. If you want to book tickets, you can go to paviliontheatre.ie. You can also get all the information about the full festival lineup at dublintheatrefestival.com. But Sebastian Barry, always a pleasure having you in the studio. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much, Pat.